You're listening to Sex Gets Real with Dawn Sarah. That's me. This is a place where we explore sex, bodies, and relationships from a place of curiosity and inclusion, tying the personal to the cultural, where you're just as likely to hear tender questions about shame and the complexities of love as you are to hear experts challenging the dominant stories around pleasure, body politics, and liberation. This is about the big and the small, about sex and everything surrounding it we don't usually name. The funny, the awkward, the imperfect happen here in service to joy, connection, healing, and creating healthier relationships with ourselves and each other. So welcome to Sex Gets Real. Don't forget to hit subscribe. Hey you, thanks for being here this week with me. I am beyond exhausted, but also lit up because I am doing narrative therapy foundations certification this week, and it is 5 days. I'm on the fifth day. It is 5 days of intense theory and looking at like anthropological theory and sociological theory and psychology and the history of modernism and post-structuralism, and talking about moving away from individualism within the therapeutic practice. It's awesome and intense and fantastic, and their values are so aligned with mine around anti-oppressive work. And there's some really, really incredible people doing really incredible things out in the world using narrative therapy. So I am excited to share more about that on a future episode. But just know that I am pooped. So this is going to be a short intro. So this week I've got a beautiful, beautiful chat with Evian Whitney. I've been following her for quite a while on Instagram. She does the sensual selfie challenge, and she specializes in sensuality and the erotic. Her work is so tender and beautiful and welcoming, and our conversation is really all about sensuality as self-care and as self-expression, stepping away from the performance of sex and all of the shoulds that so many of us carry, especially women and non-binary folks, and really focusing on the delights of the body and connecting with pleasure in a way that isn't about performing sex. We also talk about body hair and non-monogamy, so I think you're really going to like this episode. So let me tell you a little bit about Evian, and then we did record a bonus for Patreon. So if you support the show at $3 a month and above, you get access to weekly bonus content. And this week, of course, there comes a bonus with Evian. I think you're going to quite enjoy it. If you support it $5 a month and above, you also get to help answer listener questions with me. Sometimes it's two or three in a week. Sometimes it's one. Be sure to head to patreon.com/sexgetsreal to support the show and to hear your bonus content. So here is a little bit about Evian, and then we will jump in. Evian Whitney is a writer, sexuality doula who helps facilitate, educate, and hold space for women and femme-identifying individuals who want to heal and liberate their sexuality. She's also the host of the podcast, The Sexually Liberated Woman, which is an ongoing dialogue about sexual awakening and identity. You can find out more about Evian's work at sexloveliberation.com. And of course, I've got her links in the show notes for this episode. So here is my beautiful, sensual, engaging chat with Evian. Welcome to Sex Gets Real, Evian. I am so excited to talk to you today about sensuality and bodies and pleasure. I think this is going to be a rich discussion.
Oh, me too. I'm really excited. I can't wait to dive in. You have some really juicy topics in there.
It was so much fun. You know, I've been following you for a while. Your Instagram is just a dream come true of like
Oh, thank
beauty and
you.
senses. Yeah. And getting to just go a little bit deeper into interviews and blog posts, it was a beautiful experience. For everyone listening, if you have not yet checked those things out, please do. It is something for the senses that will delight, I think.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate that.
Yeah. So I'd love to start with, you know, so much of the work that you do is really about honoring the senses and being connected to your sensuality and really coming at it from like an inner truth and power perspective. And so for those of us that are listening, and maybe, you know, the only thing we know about sensuality is kind of the porn version or the pop culture version, how do you define sensuality in your life?
Yeah, that's a great question. One thing that's been really frustrating in my history with the word sensuality is that for me, for the longest time, it was only designated to sex and the sexual. And I definitely think that there is space for sensuality to be included within sexuality. But I think because so much of our experiences around sex feels really taboo, and it feels really heavy, and like there's a lot of fear in there, a lot of shame in there. Trying to access sensuality can feel just as heavy. It can feel just as shameful. So, in my experience, when I was first, I guess, coming to the understanding of what sensuality and sensual was, I was noticing that like I wasn't really wanting to explore sensuality because it was attached so deeply to sex, and I was having my own sexual hangups at the time, and it just felt like, oh, I can't access sexuality. How on earth am I going to access sensuality if they're basically one and the same? And so when it came to my own sexual liberation journey, and honestly, like my sensual liberation journey, I made the choice to separate the two. Like, just in my brain, I needed those two words to be compartmentalized. And so, the way that I have since understood and am now teaching about sensuality is that sensuality is about the senses. It's about making your body feel good. It's about pleasure. It's and pleasure not in the sexual realm, because I think a lot of us can hear that word and think sexual pleasure, orgasm. But I'm talking, and I mean that's all great too, don't get me wrong. But I'm talking about pleasure as in what makes us feel good, like what makes us feel what makes us go like, ah, oh, okay, I can relax and I can luxuriate in the feel of what's happening to me right now. So I like to use sensuality as kind of like a it's kind of like a philosophy of getting really connected to your senses, your five senses, your six senses. I believe that your intuition is a sixth sense, and so I think that that is really inherent a part of sensuality. And yeah, it's been for me, that's been a really, really good different, or it's been a really good thing to differentiate, because again, when I'm accessing sensuality, oftentimes it's not coming from a place of sexuality. It's just coming from what does my body need in this moment to feel good? Or what senses of mine haven't been getting enough love for me? And then I can kind of go through that and find certain practices or do certain things that bring that connection and that sense of awareness and mindfulness to those parts of myself.
That mindfulness and that deliberate kind of cultivation of inquiry and nurturing is such a powerful thing.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Especially with sensuality too. You know, I think that since you one of the things that I teach about sensuality is that its sensuality is mindfulness. You know, like I feel my most sensual when I am actually connected and tuned in and very aware of each of my senses. So what I'm smelling, what I'm tasting, what I'm hearing, what I'm seeing, what I'm feeling. And I think Maybe it's possible for you to be sensual without that mindfulness, but in my experience, having that mindfulness and creating a practice of being mindful about my sensuality has been just like really, it's been really self-caring, it's been really self-loving, and it's allowed me to experience a deeper relationship with my body that I don't know if I would have had if I hadn't done this work around sensuality.
My therapist has been inviting me for the past, I don't know, year or so. One of the things she says is the way that we live our lives is art. And she very much is interested in exactly what you're saying, this like cultivating spaces that delight all of our senses. Like, what are the smells we're inviting into our office, into our bedroom, into our kitchen? Mm-hmm. What are the sights? What are the, you know, sounds? I mean, so I've been trying to slowly fill my space with art, like that I really truly find beautiful, and flowers and smells that, you know, if I just take a moment to smell them kind of really bring me into the here and now. And just, you know, it's not like overhaul all the things all at once, but just bringing in these little things here and there throughout my home have made such a big difference in me feeling so much more like present and connected.
I love hearing that. I love hearing that people are talking more about pleasure in that sense, like doing things that make you and the experience you have feel good to you. And whenever I talk about sensuality, I think people are expecting like these big grand gestures of sensual opulence where, you know, they're surrounded by flowers and a million candles and there's music, like, and that can absolutely be a thing. But I think sometimes the most powerful and potent experiences that I've had have been in just the simple moments. So like, even if like, sometimes I go all day without really connecting to my body because I'm a business owner, I'm doing calls all day, I'm like writing, I'm at my computer all the time. And so even if I just take 5 minutes to put like a body butter, like a sweet smelling body butter on my hands, and actually taking those 5 minutes to just luxuriate in the feel of my hands emulsifying that body butter all over my hands, my wrists, my arms, suddenly I am in sensuality. And it doesn't have to be a practice that lasts for 7 hours. I mean, I wish it could, I would love that. But you know, I have things to do. And for me, it's really important to be able to find those small moments of sensuality throughout the day. I think that's where the real practice is. I think that like, it would be nice to have a 4-hour, you know, ritual of sensuality, but, taking those moments, just those brief moments, and being very mindful about those moments that you're taking. I mean, that's when the real work happens. Yeah.
I also really appreciate how you're distinguishing that pleasure isn't inherently tied to sex, that it's one of so many ways for us to experience our bodies in connection and feeling good. And I think that that's a place where, especially right now culturally, it can feel like pleasure and sex are kind of synonyms, but it's the scope is so much larger.
Yeah. I mean, I think sex can be very pleasurable. Sex is very pleasurable for me, but it's limiting for us to think that sex is the only place that we can access and give ourselves permission to really feel into pleasure, when we can be in a pleasurable experience outside of the context of sex. And so I'm really interested in giving people permission to prioritize their pleasure both within the context of sex, but especially outside of the context of sex, because as women, you know, we've been kind of taught to disregard our pleasure both in sex and outside of it. And so I think that one way that we can reclaim our sexual power is by prioritizing pleasure, not just within sex that we're having, but also just on a day-to-day, like buying a I'm obsessed with pastries. Like, that's my love language to myself. When I want to give myself love, I give myself a piece of cake or a pastry. So like, for me, it's like, I love pastries because they make me feel good. I love biting into a huge chunk of chocolate cake because it makes me feel good. And so being able to prioritize what makes me feel good on a day-to-day basis. It feels really radical. And it also allows me to get into this rhythm and this motion of prioritizing my pleasure so that when I go into sex, it's like, oh, I know what it feels like to feel good. And I want to feel good like that when I'm in sex. And so it gives me more of more inspiration, more of an importance to speak up and request that my pleasure is acknowledged, activated within the sexual context.
So one of the things you mentioned was sensuality and liberation. And I'd love to hear how, you know, you just mentioned power. And I think that's such an important, important word, especially for women and femme folks and queer folks and people of color, you know, anyone who's kind of navigating all the world right now and experiencing mm-hmm. oppression. You know, how is sensuality for you linked to liberation?
I think it was Audre Lorde that said self-care is a radical act. Like it's self-preservation. It's not frivolous. Like self-care and self-love is a radical act. And so when I think about sensuality, for me, sensuality and self-care are very deeply connected. Self-care and self-love. Because like when I am stimulating my senses, when I'm mindful about my senses, when I am celebrating my senses and my body, I mean, I'm in the realm of self-care. I'm in the realm of self-love. And so there's something very powerful and liberating to me about sensuality because I recognize that when I satiate my senses, when I prioritize my pleasure, when I'm doing things just for the sake of it to feel good, not because it's productive or not because, you know, that would be like the right thing to do. When I'm just doing things that center my pleasure, that is a radical act. And that's liberating. Yeah. It's really liberating.
So you just completed the sensual selfie challenge, which was massive. For folks who are on Instagram, please check out the hashtag sensual selfie challenge. I'll have a link in the show notes for this. And you wrote something really powerful on day 3 of the challenge. And if it's okay with you, I'd love to read it. It's a couple of
sentences.
Oh, please.
Yeah.
Okay.
Please.
So you wrote, you know, on day 3, we're being reminded through gross comments, creepy DMs, concerned messages from family, our censored photos being removed, that this work we're doing of sensual space taking and sexual celebration has real consequences. We're being reminded that in making ourselves radically visible in this way, we're making ourselves targets of slut shame, of unsolicited sexualization, of respectability politics. This work is dangerous. It's threatening the foundations of very old and tired systems of oppression. It's triggering in people responses to fear us, to be concerned for us, to insert themselves into our sexual narrative, to feel entitled to the fruits of our emotional and sensual labor. And it's making people very, very uncomfortable. I love that so much. There's such nuance in that around not only are we doing this for ourselves and kind of putting it out into the world, but all of the ways then other people are inserting themselves and their narratives into that. And so I'd love to hear a little bit about the challenge itself and then kind of this this expression that you shared around the consequences.
Yeah. So I created the Sensual Selfie Challenge back in March. I did the first round back in March, and it was something that I created on the fly. I was just like, I think it'd be really rad to see a whole bunch of women and femmes take up space in a similar way that I do, because I've been taking sensual, sexual, nude-ish photos and posting them on the internet for, I think it's almost 3 years now. And that's been my way of radically taking up space. It's been my way of taking my erotic power back from the male gaze. It's been my way of unhiding and unshaming my sexuality in a culture that tells me that I'm more worthy when those parts of me are kept hidden. And so I wanted to give people the opportunity, if they felt comfortable to do so, to play within those lines. And so my vision for the sensual selfie challenge was for folks to, in ways that feel comfortable for them, not disregarding their own like comfort levels, but just going with what feels good for them, to begin to express that, to begin to take up space in a sensual way, in a body positive kind of way, in a sexual way, if that's something that that felt good to them. And when I did it the first time, I got like, I think a little over 1,000 people who participated. And then I did it again in September. And this round we had more than 4,000. So it was massive. And it's very, very clear to me, at least every time that I've done this challenge so far, that this work is necessary. Like it's not just necessary for the people who are doing it, but it's necessary for the culture who's witnessing it happening. And one thing that tends to happen in doing this work, and I've experienced this personally, and then I'm also watching it happen professionally, as you know, I was facilitating the challenge, is that, you know, you have these first 2 days of sensual space taking, and you're showing off your body, and you're writing these beautiful comments, and you're connecting with the community. And for some reason, on the third day, that's when shit starts to hit the fan. Like that's when things start coming back down to earth, and you realize, oh, this isn't like, I'm reminded of where I am. Like I am in a culture that has told me these falsehoods and has given me these limiting beliefs about my capacity to be safe as I express myself in this way. I am living in a culture that is really concerned about my well-being if they see that I am openly expressing and extolling the beauty of my body. And it was really important for me on that third day to make a statement and let people know that, like, I feel you. And I could even feel the energy on that day. Like I could feel after the first 2 days were so high, like everyone was so pumped and getting so much like press, and everyone was talking about it. The community was buzzing. But the third day I woke up and I just felt, it just felt different. I mean, it was still, you know, lots of high energy, but it was a different kind of energy. And it was really important for me to talk about what people were experiencing, and also to encourage people and let them know that like what you're feeling is understandable. It's normal. Please keep taking up space anyway, because that's exactly what our culture wants. They want us to be small. They want us to like internalize these messages. It's so important for us to, of course, honor ourselves, acknowledge what's coming up for us. If you want to take a step back from the challenge today, that's totally fine. Tend to your emotions and all of those things. But please remember that you taking up space and you smashing the patriarchy with your bomb ass selfies is a radical act. And we need more people showing up in this way. And it was really beautiful. It seemed after I made that statement that some of the fog lifted for some people, and they were able to be like, okay, I'm grounded now. I'm centered. I remember why I'm doing this. Let's keep posting. And I mean, it continued to be an incredibly productive and transformational rest of the challenge. So yeah, it was amazing.
The images that came out of that are just radiant, yeah, and moving and
stunning,
and right? Like so important,
mm-hmm.
You know, to choose the ways that we, not only to choose the ways that we share ourselves for ourselves, but also the ways that we choose to view ourselves, because we're not often asked, how do we want to view ourselves?
Right.
You know?
Right. Right.
And I'm just thinking about this conversation that I had with Alok earlier this year, who is a genderqueer artist, and they were saying, you know, that they dress in these really like loud and clashy and rather shocking ways for themselves. Like they're not dressing this way for anyone else. It's Alok waking up and asking, how do I want to be in the world? How do I want to look down and see myself today? What do I want to kind of transmit? And it's very much for self. And I think that kind of what you're naming here around that energy around day three of like people are starting to notice that I'm putting myself out in this way is, you know, so much of the way that so many of us exist on the internet and social media specifically is feeling like when someone puts something out, it is in some way for us, this consumption, you know, or this entitlement of because you've shared this thing, now I have a right to comment on it or to feel like it's for me. And I think it's so important you use the word witness. And that, I think, is where we can do better. You know, when someone's sharing themselves in this way, how can we witness them and allow them to do this knowing it's for them?
Right.
It's not for us.
Right.
And yeah, I really appreciate that word and naming, like we can witness people doing this.
Yeah.
But we have to remember it's for them.
Yeah. One of the reasons why I do this work and I created the Sensual Selfie Challenge was because, you know, I noticed that in like our culture has given us a lot of complexes about what our sexual self-image should be like what it means to be sexy, what it means to be desirable. And, you know, those, I mean, yes, it's some of those things can fit our own sexual narratives, like who we want to be, you know, like we can see some aspects of what pop culture and, you know, main media is telling us sexy looks like, and we can be like, oh yeah, that's my sexy too. But for a lot of us, those actualizations of sexy don't fit. And so what I wanted to do with the Sensual Selfie Challenge and what I'm continuing to do with my own, with the way that I take up space, with the way that I post photos on the internet, with the way that I teach workshops about sensual self-portraiture and sexting yourself and all of these things, is we are helping to shift that sexual self-image. And we are also giving ourselves space to create our sexual self-image outside of the male gaze, outside of like white supremacist patriarchal capitalism. Like that to me is really, really powerful. And I was actually just talking a couple days ago to my students who are taking my digital course, Sexting Myself, right now, which is basically a continuation, a deeper, more refined, more in-depth continuation of the Sensual Selfie Challenge. And it's always so surprising. My students, like, they come to this class and they come to this workshop and this course, and they think, oh, we're just taking photos. Like, that's easy. Yeah. Like, I take many selfies anyway. Like, that's all that it is. And then they start doing this practice and they realize, holy shit, like, this isn't just about taking selfies. This is about dismantling stories that have been keeping me from feeling sexually free. This is about like deconstructing narratives about my body, about my sexuality, about my femininity that haven't been serving me for 20 plus years. And so I love that something as seemingly simple as taking a selfie has instigated this revolution of sexual liberation, of sensual space taking, and of like body positivity. I mean, it's really, really rad to witness it. And you're right, the selfies are stunning. I mean, that entire week, I was just like, how are people so beautiful? I don't understand. It's beautiful. It's so beautiful.
It is. Yeah, one of the things that I've really been unpacking over the past year is kind of this, the pop culture and kind of cultural expectation of performing our sexuality, of performing for others to kind of earn our worthiness, to be seen as like externally as someone who is desirable and deserving, and versus this experiencing of inner truth and inner experience and inner wisdom. And like, how do we start finding that voice and taking up that space? Because it is one scary and countercultural to do that. And you're so right. Like the beauty that is unleashed when people even just kind of start wondering, you know, like, well, maybe if I took this picture, maybe if I invited in this sense, that might feel good to me. I mean, even that question itself can yield so much incredible, I don't know, radiance, because we're starting to turn to self instead of turn to outside.
Right. Yeah. One question that really started this work of self-portraiture for me was like, who would I be as a sexual being within my sexual expression, within my sexual identity, if I wasn't performing? And I realized that a lot of my sexuality was performative. Like, I was performing for the male gaze. I was performing for my partner. I was performing aspects of what sexuality and sexiness and desirability looked like, because I'd seen it play out, you know, for the last 30 plus years of my life. And it was really important for me to take my power back from those images and from those assumptions and those narratives, those stories that didn't serve me. And so I think you're right. I think sex for so many of us has been performative. I mean, I just think about the people who fake their orgasms. Like, I was one of those women. I had a relationship where I faked my orgasms for the 3 years that we were with each other. Like, he never gave me an orgasm. I never had an orgasm with him. And so, when I think about just how prevalent it is for us to perform, when I think about like how common and almost like normalized it is for us to fake sexual empowerment or sexual confidence for someone else's pleasure, it really got underneath my skin. And I was like, how can I call myself sexually liberated or sexually free if I'm performing in this way? And I'm putting on a persona, I'm putting on a mask that doesn't even fit me. Like, it's not who I am. And so I'm always trying to encourage my clients to be really, just really like, cognizant and aware of where they're performing their sexuality in their lives, and finding ways to reclaim a sexuality, a sexual expression, a sexual identity that is authentic to them and that makes them feel happy and fulfilled.
Yeah. One of the things that I've been trying to gently hold in my own life, and invite, you know, people who listen to the show and then I work with one-on-one to do as well, is this interrogation that we can start doing of what are the stories we've been given? Who told us this is how it's supposed to be? Mm-hmm. What are all of the messages around us that just keep reinforcing those stories? That interrogation can happen alongside this tenderness for who we are now.
Right.
And the confusion we might have and the uncertainty that we might have of, well, I think this is what my self-expression is. I think this is what my pleasure is. And being able to hold that might change as you continue to do the interrogation, mm-hmm. I think is so important, because there's this tendency to beat ourselves up and to be rather cruel to ourselves. But if we can do the both of like, do I really believe this? Is this really what I want? And not being sure is okay. We don't have to have all the answers right away.
Absolutely. It's so much about you being able to ask yourself those questions and be curious about the answers. Like, I always tell my clients this, like, it's okay if the answer is, I don't know. You'll eventually be able to figure it out. Just keep asking yourself those questions and keep opening yourself up to the potential for those answers to reveal themselves to you, because they will. Eventually they will. You just have to keep coming back to them and keep exploring them.
So around this kind of questioning the narratives that we're given and the stories we have about our bodies, one of the things that I adore is the way that you've talked about your body hair and your relationship with it. And I started an experiment last December to stop shaving. Mm-hmm. And at first I was kind of embarrassed by all of it, but now I feel much more comfortable with my armpit hair. There's certain situations where I'm still a little like, I feel a little self-conscious right now, but I'm mostly yes. good. You know, my leg hair is a little bit harder for me. I'm still really struggling with that one, but I want to keep exploring that, you know, like, this is the way that my body is just made to be. Yeah. And who told me it was not sexy to have body hair? So what has that been like for you to kind of unpack and challenge that story?
That was interesting. I mean, I first want to answer your question of like, who told me that my having body hair is not natural or not healthy. It was, what are they called? The shaving industry. Like, the only reason why women had started shaving. I mean, we weren't shaving. I think it was up until like what, the 1920s that's when like these ads started coming up because shaving and razor companies wanted to sell more products. And so they basically manufactured an insecurity and told women that it is unclean and it is unnatural for you to have hair here. And so that's when the phenomenon of shaving every part of ourselves like came into place, which is like really interesting. That was a really interesting piece of the history for me to know, because this whole time I thought that, like, you know, it was natural to shave. It was unnatural to have hair there. And to really like put it into a context of like, this was a marketing scheme. Like, this was capitalism. Like, people, this had nothing to do. There was no like medical basis for this whatsoever. It was just so that people could sell products. That's when I was like, oh, okay, this is stupid. You know? And I mean, I want to be very clear and say that, you know, it is a personal choice for people to shave or not shave. I don't look down on any person, any woman who chooses to get Brazilians, to wax their leg hair, to shave their armpits. I think everybody has a choice, you know, and we are allowed to choose how we want our bodies to look. But I also want to caution people against going with the flow of things without questioning where those things came from. Because if I hadn't read this history and if I hadn't sat down and really thought, why am I shaving? Like, really, what is it about shaving? Like, other than the fact that everyone else does it, other than the fact that it's like drilled into my head that smooth skin is better, like, where does that come from? And does that line up with my own desires for my body? Does that line up with my own philosophies about the way that my body wants to look? And if people can answer those questions and be like, yeah, actually, I prefer my legs to be clean shaven, like, it's something that I really enjoy doing, that's fine. But for me, I couldn't really answer that question and be like, oh yeah, I actually really enjoy shaving. I hated shaving. Shaving's terrible. It's such a nuisance. I actually shaved my legs for the first time in like, gosh, 3 years last year on my birthday, because I wanted something to be like, I was feeling really luxurious and like a queen. And I was like, oh, I kind of miss the feel of having, you know, hairless legs and feeling, you know, fabric on them and stuff like that. It was awful. I hated the razor burn, the shaving took forever. I was like, why am I doing this to myself? Mm-hmm. So it's important for people to know that, like, it wasn't as easy as one day I woke up and I was like, I'm never shaving again. And then I loved my hairy body. No, I mean, there are still days when, I mean, I have like a little happy trail that goes down from my belly button to my pubic area. And that's because when I was, I think, 13, I thought it would be really cool to shave that part of my body. And sometimes when you shave things, they grow back even thicker. And so I have a really nice thick happy trail that goes down from my belly button to my pubic hair. And that's been the hardest part for me to love about myself, to be able to see that part as beautiful, to see that part of me as clean and natural and feminine and sexy. So it takes a lot of time, and it's still taking a lot of time for me to unlearn the falsehood that body hair equals unsexy, or body hair equals you're not desirable. Mm-hmm. But the more that I continue to live with this new belief system that, like, my body hair is beautiful, it's natural, it's perfect as it is, the more it's easier for me to believe those things. And it also helps that my partner is like he's very all about it too. He prefers me with armpit hair than he does without it. So that helps too.
And I think that's an important thing to name. You know, I also have the privilege of a partner who, you know, he's like, this is your body. So you do whatever makes you feel good. And then I'm all on board about you feeling good. And so, you know, full bush or shaved armpits or everything in between, you know, he's like, cool, I'm glad you're doing something with your body that feels good. And not everybody has someone in their life that is like that. And
totally,
you know, I think that's a reality that we have to grapple with of, mm-hmm. are we wanting to manipulate our body for someone else, because that feels generous, or because we feel shame? And if our partners or the people in our lives comment on our body and it doesn't feel good and generous, do we want to do the labor of setting that boundary and maybe having to set it repeatedly? You know, for me at this stage in my life, if I had someone come in and comment on my body in a derogatory way, it would be like, you're not allowed to do that, and we're not going to have this exchange anymore. But not everyone is there. So, you know, I think we also being gentle with ourselves and where we are and what our capacity is important. But I am very grateful to also have a partner who's like, cool, armpit hair.
Yeah. I mean, it helps to be affirmed. It helps to have someone else in your corner saying to you what your culture is not saying to you, you know, because when you try something new, I mean, it's similar to like when you do something new with your hair and you're in that weird space of like, oh, and I'm talking about the hair on your head, like, I like it, but it's new and I'm not sure. And, you know, it's so nice to be able to have a partner to affirm you and be like, no, this is beautiful. I love the way that you look. And I think that we can apply those same that same kind of importance when it comes to affirmation with other things too, like body hair, you know?
Yeah. So you mentioned your partner, and I know some of the things that you've written about and that you mentioned you like to talk about is your queer identity and your relationship with your queerness. And as someone who identifies as queer as well, who's married to a cis queer man, sometimes, you know, my queerness is invisible to others, and I have a lot of straight passing privilege. And so I'd love to hear a little bit about your relationship with your queerness and kind of coming into it and how you move around inside of it now.
Yeah. I also have a lot of straight passing privilege. I'm also in a relationship with a cis dude who is queer. So we both have the ability to be passed over as straight, or just as like both a hetero couple and also a monogamous couple, which is like really, really frustrating, but it's real. It's what's been really cool for me in this experience is that I've been able to have the best of both worlds. Like, I've been able to have a really loving and constant support system within my relationship with my husband, and then also have the freedom and the agency to explore my own sexual desires and my own sexual needs. And for us, it's inevitable for us to have an open relationship because our queer identity is so important to us that it's something that wants to be expressed, and it's something that we both want to honor. And so I really appreciate that he and I have created a really strong relationship with a very strong foundation where we are able to both come together as lovers and as partners and as friends, and also honor who we are individually outside of this relationship that we've created together. And my queer identity, it's a lot more important to me these days than it was like, I don't know, 10 years ago. I think when I was having these inklings of being not straight, as I like to call it, I didn't know what to do with that because I was with my husband and we had just gotten married, and I was like, well, I guess I'll have to do this in another lifetime. And so it was something that I was consciously trying not to give space to, but it still kept popping up for me. And so that's why I'm really grateful to relationship models like non-monogamy, open relationships, polyamory, because it gives folks like me permission to explore the full spectrum of who they are sexually, who they are romantically, who who they are individually outside of the relationship that they have currently. So, I love being queer. I love my queer husband. I love my queer relationship. And I'm so grateful to be in a relationship that honors that part of me and doesn't see me acknowledging that part of me as a subtraction of, you know, what he and I have together.
So I get lots and lots of questions from people who are interested in exploring non-monogamy or polyamory or, you know, trying a threesome for the first time. And one of the things that seems to be a frequent question that comes in from people is, how do I continue to nurture and grow my existing partnership? How do we keep coming back together and making it a really strong, wonderful, nurturing place while we're doing something that's rather unconventional and maybe mm-hmm. having new relationships with other people or sexual exchanges? So for you, how do you nurture that relationship and keep it feeling something that's, you know, really important and vibrant?
Yeah. It's a little harder to do when you're in a relationship where you guys have been together for a long time. Jonathan and I are going on 12 years this year. So it's a little difficult to, especially when you have like new relationship energy with someone else, then it feels fun and mysterious and novel. It's easy to see why the flame in your primary or main relationship would start to like dim a little bit because it isn't new. Maybe it isn't as fun because you guys have been together for a long time. But the one thing that has helped me and Jonathan is trying to see our relationship every day with new eyes. And so not getting to a place of like, oh, been there, done that. I already know you, but really trying to keep up this mystery with each other. And it's really true. You know, I mean, while the institution of our relationship is pretty like stable and, you know, there we have our rhythms and our routines, we're two individuals who are constantly growing. We're constantly evolving. We're constantly changing and exploring new parts of ourselves. And so it's been really helpful for us both to maintain that awareness of like, yes, I've been with this person for 12 years, but who he was 12 years ago is not the same person that he is today. Who he was a year ago is not the same person that he is today. And so just being really mindful of the fact that like he is a human being that is in a constant state of evolution. And it's important for me to hold space for the new things that he's uncovering about himself and to encourage him to continue to be curious about those parts of himself has been really, really helpful for us. The other thing that is a little bit more practical is like, you know, with the same kind of energy and excitement that we feel with the people that we're dating, we try to do those same sorts of things in our relationship. So like if we're going on dates with a new potential partner, we also make sure that we go on dates with each other, you know, like with the same kind of excitement, the same kind of energy. And obviously it's not going to be the same because it's a very different thing to go on a date with someone who you've been with for a long time versus someone you just met like on Tinder a few days ago.
Right.
But I mean, I think it's important to nurture your relationship through going on dates, through surprising each other, through taking time away from Netflix and like actually sitting down to talk to each other. And it's definitely hard. It's something that I think we both could be better about doing. But it's, I think that that's been one of the things that has kept us from not burning out on each other and also not, you know, putting all of our eggs into the basket of someone else and maintaining like, yeah, you are my person. You will always be my person. And there's really new and exciting and fun things about you too that I'm excited to explore. So yeah, that's kind of how we do it. But again, it's like, it's not easy. It's a lot easier to say it than it is to do it mm-hmm. for sure.
Isn't that true of so many things?
mm-hmm. So many things.
Yes. So you and I are about to go record a little bonus chat for our Patreon supporters of the show. But before we do that, I would love it if you would share with everyone how they can stay in touch with you and find you online and see all your beautiful, beautiful work.
Oh, thank you. They can find me on my website, sexloveliberation.com. There they can find how to work with me, some of the courses that I'm teaching, and some of the essays that I've written over the last 8 years. They can also find me on Instagram. That's where I'm most active in terms of social media. They can find me at evion.whitney. And yeah, I'm happy to be a resource to anyone who has questions about self-portraiture or sexual liberation or just prioritizing their pleasure. I'm so happy to be a resource to anyone who wants to talk to me about it. So yeah, that's where they can find me.
I will have all of those links, of course, in the show notes and at sexgetsreal.com for this episode. Thank you so much for being here with me today and sharing your stories and your wisdom. This has felt incredibly nourishing.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It was a really fun conversation.
To everybody who tuned in, thank you so much for listening. Be sure to click those links and follow along with all of the selfie challenge adventures that I'm sure are going to be coming down the road. Also, if you want to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/sexgetsreal and tune in to this little bonus chat that we're going to have, which I think is going to be super yummy. So thank you so much for being here with us, and I will talk to you next week. Bye.
You used to light up like a spark. Now you're blue, treading water in the dark.
A huge thanks to the vocal Few, the married duo behind the music featured in this week's intro and outro. Find them at vocalfew.com. Head to patreon.com/sexgetsreal to support the show and get awesome weekly bonuses. As you look towards the next week, I wonder, what will you do differently that rewrites an old story, revitalizes a stuck relationship, or helps you to connect more deeply with your pleasure?
So don't be ashamed. Love is supposed to be.